Good morning. It's good to see everybody out this morning. We have some kind of out of the immediate area traveling for Thanksgiving and probably others, so we hope they remain safe and are back with us soon. I guess I should mention Angie's had strep throat for a couple of days, so she's not out, and I think Avonlea has had pneumonia and Relly's not feeling well, so keep all of them in prayer as well. I sort of went around to the different classes and told the teachers that we were going to be talking about Daniel and the lion's den. And so I kind of went around to the different classes to ask the kids what they remembered about Daniel and the lion's den. And Nathan said that God closed the lion's mouths so they couldn't chew him. And Lucy said that was really good for God to do that for shutting the lion's mouth. You get in to Emmy Jo's class, and they've got it down pretty pat. They know that God saved Daniel, that he was sent the angel to be in the lion's den. And so they've got that story down pretty good. I think it's good for us to sort of take moments to realize that these little ones are a part of us too. They are part of our worship together. And so this is just sort of a little way for me to be able to kind of include them into what we do. Because sometimes listening to a guy for 20 to 25 minutes is not real high on kids' lists. But I know that Jesus is. And so I just wanted to sort of take a moment to include them in what we're doing. Maybe after I left the classroom, they too felt like they had been delivered from the lion's den. I certainly did by getting away from them unscathed. But I think that it's good for them to be a part of it. So they told a little bit of the story. We'll get into some context, some stuff that we know very well. We've said it for several weeks, but just to sort of bring us up to speed, and just as we talk about this story of Daniel and the lions, I want you to think maybe how this story is relative to Jesus, how Daniel's life and his current crisis, how that compares with Jesus. I'm not going to speak specifically about that, but I would like for you to be thinking about that about this story of Daniel and how it compares to Jesus's experiences. But today we're going to, as we have been doing, we're going to focus on the story itself and the things that we can kind of learn from it. You'll remember at the beginning of Daniel, the Babylonians come in, they sack Jerusalem, and they take the best of Jerusalem, the best of the Hebrews, and Daniel and his friends Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are part of them. And we've talked about them. They were taken from Jerusalem, and again, not just them, lots of people were taken from Jerusalem because the kingdom of Judah had disobeyed God. And so they were taken away into captivity, conquered by the Babylonians. And when they were taken to Babylon, they were actually trained there to appease the new king, King Nebuchadnezzar, that we've talked about. And King Nebuchadnezzar, he's a sort of king that rules the world at that time. And what he does is he teaches these guys the ways of Babylon. He teaches them the literature of Babylon. They're given Babylonian names. They are made into eunuchs because they are going to serve in the king's house, right? They are being indoctrinated into all things Babylon. They are trying to turn these Israelites into Babylon. And you know, like 4,000 years later in America, that's hard to read, isn't it? That somebody's going to force you to do something because they want you to. That's a tough pill to swallow for at least this Western guy. It really kind of angers me when this sort of happens, where they're kind of in a pickle here. They're told they have to eat a certain food and drink a certain thing. And so they ask if they can do it a different way. Daniel knows that as Israelites, this food is unclean. It could have been maybe offered to idols. It could have been maybe just the type of food it was. But whatever the reason was, Daniel asks the chief eunuchs to allow them to do something a different way, to just eat vegetables and drink water, is basically what Daniel says. He says, try it for 10 days. And so when they do, that they are found more healthy than everyone else. And so that's what they did. Later, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And so he goes to all his magicians and he says, I need you to tell me what my dream means, but first I would like you to tell me the dream. And they said, well, we can't do any of that, right? Nobody can do that. And so finally comes before Nebuchadnezzar, and he's able to interpret his dream through God. And Nebuchadnezzar, he sort of makes this comment to Daniel that you have the ability to interpret dreams. And Daniel responds that no wise man, no enchanter, no magician, no astrologer can show the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. And so Daniel is pointing to his God, and he's saying, I'm not the one who can do it, but the God in heaven can. And then in chapter 3, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're told that they are to worship an idol, and then they're willing to do so. And so Nebuchadnezzar, he throws them in a fiery furnace. But before that, they tell Nebuchadnezzar, they said, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If it be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. And I love verse 18. It says, but if not, be it known to you, O king, that we're not going to serve or worship the golden image that you have set up. Now that makes this Western person feel a lot better. Now that they don't know whether God is going to deliver them in this realm or not. Because he may not. But even though they know that, they're still not going to bow down. They're going to remain faithful. And so that's what happens, right? Nebuchadnezzar, he throws them in and they don't burn up. And when the king looks and he sees in there, he sees a fourth person. And he says that they bear the image or they look like one of the sons of the gods. So maybe it's an angel. Maybe it is the angel of the Lord that we read about. We don't know, right? But it is clear that God is with them and they are delivered. And you see Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego go all through this, and what you discover is they continue to have faith in God. They continue to point towards God. They continue to help the kings of Babylon see who God is. And then we discover that at least Nebuchadnezzar, and I would say for years, a few years at least, after that, they acknowledge God. They praise God. And so we get to chapter 5, and that's where we were last week, and that was the end of the Babylonian Empire. Nebuchadnezzar, long dead. Other kings have taken his place, and then who is left is this guy named Belshazzar. And Belshazzar was a terrible king, and we learned about his arrogance and pride last week when we talked about how the city of Babylon was finally overcome by the Persians. And so now we have Darius the Mede. I listened to a podcast. I've always called him Darius. And then I listened to this podcast by this historian, and he called his name Darius. And I just immediately just knew I was wrong. Like, I've been wrong my whole life. This guy is no doubt right. So I'm going to say Darius, and you guys can roll your eyes at me. But the question becomes, if you know history, you know history tells us that Cyrus the Great is who takes over Babylon. And so the question becomes, who is Darius, right? Well, chapter 9 mentions him again. Chapter 9 says, in the first year of Darius, son of, let's go with Ahasuerus, the descendant of the Mede, who was made over the realm of the Chaldeans. And then we'll talk a little bit about that more next week. In chapter 9, a Mede, and by descendant, is made the ruler over the Babylonian kingdom. Now, there are lots of different ideas about who Darius is. Some say that it's just another name for Cyrus. Some say that Darius is a title for Cyrus. The word Darius means Lord. So I guess maybe it is what it is. Now it says he's a son of Ahasuerus. Other versions will say Xerxes. And we know the name Xerxes. Xerxes is a title for the kings of Persia. So maybe that's what it is. Cyrus, no doubt, though, conquered the kingdom of Babylon, possibly placing Darius over Babylon. And to me, that's what makes more sense. Because if you think about it, the Persian Empire was a whole lot larger than Babylon, right? Than just the city of Babylon. And so Cyrus can't be everywhere at once. And so I sort of lean that Cyrus has placed Darius over as king of Babylon. But whatever the explanation, Darius here is the one in charge, and he's about to change some things. So Darius is the new king, and Scripture says that it pleases him to set over the kingdom 120 satraps to be throughout the whole kingdom, and over them three high officials, of whom Daniel was one, to whom these satraps should give an account so that the king might suffer no loss. So a satrap is sort of like a governor. And Daniel is one of the administrators over these satraps of Babylon. So these guys are supposed to sort of collect taxes and do those sorts of things, make sure the king was getting his due right, what he's supposed to get. And so Scripture goes on to say that Daniel became distinguished above all the other high officials and satraps because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king planned to set him over the whole kingdom. Daniel is a good leader, right? Daniel is a good administrator. He's somebody that certainly the king, basically the king of the known world at this time, he can count on him, that he can put Daniel over everything and have full trust. So sort of take a load off of him, right? But not everybody likes this idea. Verse 4 tells us that the high officials and the satraps sought to find ground for a complaint against Daniel with regard to the kingdom, but they could find no ground for complaint or any fault because he was faithful and no error was found in him. Not only did the king realize that Daniel was trustworthy, that he's a man of integrity, these guys knew it too. These other officials too knew it too. And so they're jealous. And they certainly don't want Daniel to be in charge. Why is the king not putting us in charge, right? That's what they're no doubt thinking. They didn't like the fact that Daniel is moving up. And so they want to trip him up. They want Daniel to fail, but they couldn't figure out a way for Daniel to fail. And so one of the wise men finally says, we're not going to find any ground for complaint against Daniel unless we find it in connection with the law of his God. I mean, you could probably see that evil light bell over his head just go off. The only way that they're going to be able to catch Daniel is if there's a conflict with their faith, with the law and the law of the Persians. They have to create, right? They have to create a conflict so that Daniel becomes an enemy. Daniel and his faith become enemy. And everybody knew that Daniel's faith was something that you could count on. It says that then these high officials and these satraps, they came to agreement to the king and said to him, "O King Darius, live forever. And to me, I just see Eddie Haskell's coming into the room when I imagine these guys. It says in verse 7, all the high officials of the kingdom, the prefects, the satraps, the counselors, and the governors are agreed that the king should establish an ordinance and enforce an injunction that whoever makes a petition to any god or man for 30 days except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. And you sort of think about this for a moment. Are they telling the truth? Well, they can't be, right? They're obviously lying because Daniel couldn't have been for this, right? I don't think they talked to Daniel about this. It's possible that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were still around. I don't think that they would have agreed with this. It's possible that there are certainly others who were like Daniel who didn't agree with this to what the king finally agreed to. All of the officials, they say, agreed to it. We think it would be a great idea just for 30 days, just for 30 days for people to pray to you. That they say, oh, king, establish an injunction and sign a document that it cannot be changed according to the laws of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. Therefore, verse 9 says, King Darius signed the document and injunction. Now, I don't know. I don't know whether it's the fact that the Medes and Persians are so connected to law, and law was so important to them that once a law was put into place, no matter how unjust it was, if you were to disobey it, you were toast, right? The practice for them at this point, what was once the king said something, once he put it into law, it has to happen. You can't change it. And so the king listens to them. If everybody else thinks it's a good idea, it's not really a big deal to me, I don't think. I mean, it sounds like a good idea at the time. Have you ever had one of those? I'm probably the king of it sounds like a good idea at the time. We don't have enough time. Once me and a friend, we decided that we could build a zip line from the top of his barn down to a tree. And we did. And his older brother came and he's like, what are you morons doing? So we made a zip line. He said, have you tried it? We said, we haven't. He said, can I? We said, sure. What we forgot to include in our equation was weight. And so when he got the t-shirt on the zip line and he jumped from the barn, he just went straight down. Like he did not zip at all. Luckily, we had the high ground for quite a while. We were able to stick around up top. Cheryl Snell could probably write a book of me and Ryan thinking it's a good idea at the time. My mom, Missy, probably all of you in this room know that it's a good idea at the time. It sounds just that's what it is, right? But it usually isn't. There are consequences that come with those moments that sound like a good idea at the time. Consequences sometimes that we don't necessarily intend. And so back to Scripture, when Daniel finds out, when Daniel knew that the document had been signed, when he went to his home where he had windows in the upper chamber open toward Jerusalem, he got down on his knees three times a day and prayed and gave thanks before his God as he had done previously. Then these men came by agreement and found Daniel making petition and plea before his God. I don't like when I find out stories of people that do something good, but then you find out that they were behind the whole mess to begin with, but they want you to be thankful. Like, I don't like thanking arsonists for putting out fires. And that's what these guys have done. They've set Daniel up because they know Daniel prays three times a day towards Jerusalem with the windows open. It's easy math. But Daniel's not flaunting his faith, right? Daniel's not trying to force his prayer on anybody else. He's just doing what he's always done. Now, when the decree comes out and Daniel has a choice to make, right? He could have prayed silently. He could have gone to his closet. That's what Jesus says in Matthew, right? Close the windows, close the doors. But Daniel, he does, you know, not let anyone hear him. But that's not what Daniel did. He could have had reasons to say, yeah, you know what? I can take a break from prayer for 30 days. God's still going to know that I love him and that I want to follow him. 30 days is not that big a deal. But that's not what Daniel chose to do either, right? Well, what he chose to do was to continue the same practice that he's always followed. He continues the same habits, the same rhythm, without having to force on anyone else. Just praying to his God. And these men knew, right? They knew that Daniel was going to be praying at that time. And I think that shows for us that our faith is going to be tested as well, that we'll have choices to make. And I think if we're going to have a faith in God, it's going to be tested in some form or fashion or another at some time. And so the question is will we pass the test, and will we honor God above all else? These men, they came near and said before the king concerning the injunction. Again, oh king, did you not sign an injunction that anyone who makes petition to any god or man within 30 days except to you, O king, shall be cast into a den of lions? Yeah, I can't read these guys without my blood pressure getting up just a little bit. The king answers and says, the thing stands fast, according to the law of the Medes and the Persians, which cannot be revoked. And then they answered and said before the king, Daniel, one of the exiles from Judah pays no attention to you, O king, and or the injunction you have signed, but makes his petition 3 times a day. They come near the king and say, all of this nonsense. Daniel is willing to do whatever was necessary to pass the test and to honor God above all else. But then that gets him into trouble here. And it could be that maybe sometimes it could get us maybe into trouble too. And the thing is that's okay. It says when the king heard these words, was much distressed and set his mind to deliver Daniel, and he labored till the sun went down to rescue him. And again, I want to say, you're the king, right? What's somebody going to do if you just say no? But that's not what he does. What he does realize, what he's done was a terrible idea. What was a good idea at the time turned south here on Darius. He didn't intend for these things to happen to Daniel, so he's trying to figure out a way to get Daniel off the hook. But the thing is, again, for whatever reason, he can't do it. He can't revoke the law because I guess maybe there are witnesses, maybe. Daniel is stuck. Darius is stuck, and in addition to that, he's trying to figure this out. These men come into the king and they say, you remember, you wrote this law, you can't repeal it, you got to kill this guy. You think the king has figured out that he's being manipulated yet? I bet he has. These guys have tricked me into this, and these guys are the ones who told me this was a good idea, but it wasn't. Says the king commanded, and Daniel was brought and cast into the den of lions. The king declared to Daniel, may your God, whom you serve continually, deliver you. And I don't know if that was said in a way of caring, or you can take it lots of different ways when a king tells you something like that. Darius knew that Daniel continued to serve God, that he wasn't going to stop, that he would continually do so. He's just a man of faith in the living God, and he was hoping that living God would save Daniel. Now, when they took him in into the lion's den, it says that a stone was brought and laid on the mouth of the den, and the king sealed it with his own signet and with the signet of the lords, that nothing might be changed concerning Daniel. Then the king went to his palace and spent the night fasting. No diversions were brought to him, sleep fled from him. He was worried sick. I don't know if he had heard the stories of Nebuchadnezzar and the other Babylonian kings being a Mede, so I don't know if he knows those stories or not. But he hopes that Daniel's God can save him. He can't sleep, and so who do you think could sleep? I guess maybe we don't necessarily know, but I think Daniel may have had a pretty good night's sleep. The king worried about Daniel, and then the next morning the Bible tells us that at the break of day the king arose and went in haste to the den of lions, and he came near to the den where Daniel was. He cried out in a tone of anguish. The king declared to Daniel, "O Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you continually been able to deliver you from the lions?" He was hoping, right? God had rescued him. And it says, Daniel then said to the king, "O king, live forever. My God sent an angel and shut the lion's mouth and have not harmed me. But I was found blameless before him and also before you, O king. I have done no harm." You know, what do you notice about this? Who's with Daniel? We have an angel here. He's not alone. Just like with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, we see God being with Daniel. And so the king suddenly realized that God does have power. He's seen it for himself. And again, with our faith being tested, God too is going to be with us during that time. We see that, I think, time and time again, not just in this story of Daniel, but in other stories of Scripture as well, that God is with his people. And then what happens here? Daniel is rescued, and those who are his enemies, who tricked the king, they and their family suddenly are thrown into the lion's den themselves, and they lose their lives. It sounded like a good idea at the time to set Daniel up, but it turned out it wasn't. So the king's response is sent to the whole kingdom. He says, I make a decree that in all my royal dominion, people are to tremble in fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God, enduring forever. The kingdom shall never be destroyed, and his dominion shall be to the end. He delivers and rescues. He works signs and wonders in heaven and on earth. He who has saved Daniel from the power of the lions. You imagine, again, the power that this statement makes in the kingdom. It's the same as when Nebuchadnezzar sends this letter. Because he didn't have to say this, right? He didn't have to even say anything. But in the example of Daniel's life, because of his humility in serving the kingdom of Babylon, but also serving God while being in Babylon, King Darius here is the one who makes the statement that everybody knows that Daniel follows a God who is alive. Again, our faith is going to be tested, but when we are found faithful, God is going to be honored and we're going to be saved. God will be honored and then we'll be saved, but maybe sometimes we start thinking, well, it doesn't always kind of happen that way, right? People are going to be tested in their faith and they're going to actually die, right? There are people who suffer and they wonder, where is God? Absolutely, right? There are people like that. Does it mean that God is not with them? No way, right? God is still with them. And just like as we studied a while back about Hebrews chapter 11, you'll remember it lists all those people, and it says some had faith and it was impossible, or if you had faith that it was impossible to please God, right? There were people like Abraham and Noah and Moses and Elijah that get mentioned, people who have done great things in faith through God, how God delivered them and how he was powerfully shown. And it goes on to talk about those who were delivered from the mouths of lions, and that they were even delivered from the flames. And some even had dead people returned back to them. But there were great things that God did through their lives. But when you continue in that chapter, right, you see that there were also some that got persecuted. Some were thrown in prison. Some lost their lives by being stoned to death. Some were stabbed by swords and some were sawed in two, right? People were thrown into prisons. Who suffered mightily? Who were tortured because of their faith? And it says that the world was not worthy of those. What Hebrews 11 does is it gives us an honest picture of what it means to be faithful. Because some of us are going to be delivered from the den of lions, some may not be so fortunate. Even Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego knew that God could deliver them from the fiery furnace, but they didn't know that he was actually going to do it or not. They were still faithful, right? And so we sort of live with this contradiction. Is God going to rescue us? Is God going to save us? And the truth is, we will always be saved on some level, be it this realm or the next, right? One writer said that the picture of faith that emerges from Hebrews chapter 11 does not fit into any easy formula. Sometimes faith leads to victory and triumph. Sometimes it requires gritty determination to hang on at any cost. Hebrews 11 does not hold up one kind of faith as superior to the other. Both rest in the belief that God is in ultimate control and will keep his promises, whether that happens in this life or the next. Can't agree more. Of such people, Hebrews says that God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. The thing is whether God rescues us from the den of the lions or whether he doesn't, we're still going to be saved. We will be rescued either, again, in this life or the next. That's what faith does for the Christian. It helps remind us that those things, it doesn't make God any less God. If he doesn't rescue us from a certain situation in life, I maybe say every week when we get towards the end of the sermon that I don't know where you currently are in your walk with Christ. You may be being tested right now, that there are struggles that you are facing, whether it be health issues or whether it has to do with relationships, whether it has to do with whatever, right? It could be just your faith being tested and you know it. But I also want you to know that God still cares for you, right? This church still cares for you. That you are not alone. Well, what I want you to know that God is still there, and whether you have been rescued from this life or the next, you are going to be rescued. So I say, take hope. There is salvation that is for you. And so if there's anything that we can do, any way that we can help and encourage you, to pray with you. Maybe you're here this morning and you're ready to make the decision to follow Christ, to put Christ on in baptism. We're ready. We're ready too, right? We're ready for you to make that decision. Whatever your need may be, please come together as we stand and sing.